Welcome to this week's installment of Unsolicited Feedback. I'm Fareed Mosavat, your co-host, and I'm joined this week by interim co-host Ravi Mehta. We speak in conversation today with Casey Winters, former CPO at Eventbrite and operator from companies like Pinterest, Grubhub, and an advisor to dozens of different startups. For our part one this week, we talk about the state of consumer software. What are the opportunities? What are the risks? Is there a rebirth or a revolution coming in consumer software because of AI? I'm excited about this part one and our part two that's coming in a few days. Please listen today to our conversation with Casey. I want to posit a question. I think for a really long time, for the last maybe 5, 6, maybe even 10 years, we've seen a huge shift from the interesting stuff that seems like it's high growth and worth working on has been B2B software. Software mostly selling to other tech companies, but definitely B2B software. Businesses selling to businesses. I think if you look at the portfolios of interesting venture capitalists or IPOs over the past 5, 6 years, most of these things have been in B2B. And for a while, it was like, oh, everybody's doing boring SaaS. It used to be like the smartest people in the world are optimizing ads. And then it became the smartest people in the world are building SaaS. But I think one of the things that seems to be emerging again is people building consumer businesses again. Now, that begs the question, was consumer ever dead? Probably not. But also, it seems like we have new stuff. One of the most interesting things happening right now, OpenAI, Perplexity, Character AI, Roe, Hims, a lot of healthcare stuff. We're seeing a growth in startups and businesses selling directly to consumers again. So the question I'm positing is consumer back? Casey, you work with almost exclusively consumer companies. So I'm curious about your perspective on this.
No, definitely not. I was talking to a consumer founder today, and she went to a VC event. Portfolio companies, there are about 70 founders there. And she asked me how many of them I thought were consumer. I said 5. She responded 2, including her, out of 70 portfolio companies. This is a venture firm you have heard of. So I think when I started to back away to part-time at Eventbrite, I started thinking about advising again. I kind of took an assessment of what consumer companies are out there that are interesting, right? And I found one, which was Whatnot, and I started working with them, and they started in 2019. And I think you have to go back to probably 2016 before that to see the last big outcome in consumer, which it was Discord. And then before that, the year before was Musical.ly, I think came out in 2015, which is, you know, has become TikTok. But there's basically been a pretty big dearth of consumer style businesses since 2016. Certainly over the last 5 years, there's been relatively little to look at. The question is, does AI change this? And certainly Perplexity is an AI play, Character is an AI play. And I think my default answer is no, it doesn't. I think when new technologies come out, certainly at the platform shift level like AI seems to be, there's a lot of interest in that new technology, and there's a lot of word of mouth growth. But I think if we look back to the last couple platform shifts that we've been a part of, which is mobile and just the internet, the word of mouth doesn't last. That word of mouth needs to sequence to like a scalable growth loop. And I just don't know where the growth loops for consumer products are going to come from. Because when the internet came around, you know, a few years later, Google's like, I'm here. I got both free and paid options for you all to figure out how to grow. It's really cool. And, you know, a lot of companies built big businesses on top of Google. And then when mobile came around, people were like, oh, the app store is going to be this giant growth driver. It's not. For only a very short period of time was it. But Facebook mobile ads came out like 4 years later. And they're like, we'll take care of all your growth needs, mobile businesses, especially mobile games. And a lot of people built big businesses on top of that. So we're in a place where I don't expect there to be a Facebook mobile ads of AI or a Google of AI yet, but I also don't know that I expect them to come ever. And I kind of feel like you need one platform shift creating disruptive, cheap user acquisition to create a new bull market for consumer. And for me, I'll trust it when I see it because, and the reason just to cover, why does word of mouth not last? Well, word of mouth, unless you're completely exceeding customer expectations over time, goes away. And AI is going to become much more normalized, which means you're not going to exceed customer expectations just by being an AI company. So for this first wave of new consumer AI stuff, I kind of feel like it's the first wave of mobile. No one still uses Urban Spoon or whatever those things that were going viral at the early app store, right? They all went away. Eventually, there was a next gen that built amazing businesses, but they spent a lot of money on Facebook to do it. Or they'd figured out how to use Google because Google wasn't fully tapped out. So that's my take. So I'm still a bit bearish.
So I think there's an interesting distinction between is there growth in consumer tech and is that growth investable? And I think emphatically, yes, over the last 5 to 7 years, there's been massive growth in consumer tech. If we ask, are people spending more time and more money with tech products? They are. And we've seen that with companies like TikTok have grown really considerably. There's been massive growth in gaming with Discord and Valve and Epic. The spending level in gaming is incredibly high. There's been growth around streaming, lots of spending around streaming with Netflix and Disney and Spotify. And so I think, yes, people are using consumer products more. They're getting more value out of them. They're spending more time there. There was this question, I think probably 10 years ago, about whether or not people would spend money on digital products. And yes, they are. There's been a lot of innovation around consumer subscriptions.
Yeah.
There's been consumer subscriptions are generating a good amount of revenue on an ARPU basis, have pretty good retention. You know, there's always going to be points of saturation in terms of a company's ability to grow once it gets to a certain level. But even Netflix has proven over the last year or so that they have a lot of pricing power and that there is a willingness to pay both for people that are on the platform as well as people that were guest accounts of other friends of theirs or other family members. And so I think that there has been significant growth in consumer usage of technology products, entertainment products, and other types of shopping and commerce products. Temu is a really good example. But I think the downside for the venture industry, the downside for the startup industry.
Temu.
Sorry. I'm not a user, unfortunately. I've got to go check it out.
I think it's Temu.
According to the ads, right. It's Temu.
It's Temu, yeah.
That was a big today I learned moment, I think, when the Super Bowl ad came out. And so I think there's this natural aggregation of attention for consumers. Consumers can only hold so many things in their mind in terms of what they're using, when they're using it. And so a lot of usage tends to skew towards a small number of products and platforms. And that makes it really hard for consumer companies to break through. And there have been some that have done that, like Discord and TikTok, but it's a hard thing to do. And I think looking at what venture dollars are trying to do, the timescales that they're doing it, the risk profiles of the companies that they're investing in, I can understand why there's not more money going into consumer, but I don't think that that means that consumer tech isn't vibrant and growing. It's just growing in a way that's not investable.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, Robbie, which is if I expand the aperture of the companies I was talking about to include games, then PUBG was 2017. I think Fortnite was 2018. More recently, you've had products like Helldivers 2 and the finals get, you know, large amounts of concurrent players. Now, will they be around in 5-7 years the way Fortnite has? I don't know, right? But in games, you've seen some more booms than you have in just consumer social, right? And marketplaces that have been, you know, a few, but all of the big ones we talk about were in that mobile generation, the DoorDashes, Uber, Instacarts, you know, Airbnbs were all built in around that same time. Even if mobile wasn't the reason they worked, they're all just old at this point in terms of how long they've been around. So I think if you expand the aperture to games, consumer looks a little bit healthier, though the games industry would tell you things are not healthy right now, like tons of layoffs in 2024. Yeah. It's kind of really boom and bust, right? So games feel more like Hollywood, where you're like, you're not sure if you're going to lose $100 million on a picture or make $1 billion on a picture you make. And for a while, consumer software felt a lot safer. And really, since 2016, that has not been the case. And I just don't buy that because AI is here, it resets, and now we're going to in a bull market for consumer. It's like, no, show me where the cheap cost of acquisition is coming from. Because TikTok just decided to spend $1 billion a year on every ad platform it could for many years, which is not something startups are going to do. Temu is doing the same thing. So yeah, like smoke them if you got them, I guess. but I don't got them. That's just not something anything besides the most well-capitalized Chinese companies are going to do, because it costs too much and it's too much risk. So if I see there are cheap exploitable channels for consumer scale, that's what would probably make me bullish again. Because I agree, the consumer tech is cool. It's just, yeah, are these great businesses? Yeah. Probably not.
It's super interesting. I never really thought of it this way, but that like large market scale shifts require not just a technological change on the consumer side, which can drive it on B2B because you don't have to exploit low cost channels. You can use the ones that exist. But this is where I'm going to get back to. They also require discontinuities in acquisition opportunities, either meaningful virality in the context of the app, which actually like most of these AI things don't exactly have. They have word of mouth, but they don't have network effects yet. They have data network effects, like more data makes the product better, but they don't have Casey uses it and I use it. So Perplexity is better because Casey also uses it. Maybe someday they will, but for now, they don't seem to have those things that drive that kind of behavior. So I think your thesis is it requires not just a technological change like mobile, but also the pairing of a like really strong low cost acquisition. Now, my question mark, I'm trying to just come up with the I don't have a really strong view on this. I'm trying to figure it out, honestly, is does anything change in terms of like monetization opportunity, margins, return on investment? That actually means that I could spend more than a consumer mobile subscription app could, because I don't have to be a content company that pays a bunch of content producers because it's cheaper for me to produce content. Or, you know, the market is suddenly bigger for the number of people. Like, I'm actually thinking about some of these podcast tools that we use are really consumer tech. I know they're like business-ish, right? They're like prosumer. But there is a growth in those folks and they're willing to spend real money. Like, not the $10 I'm willing to spend for like Calm, but instead $1,000 a year to do a thing that helps me run my business in some meaningful way that I'm an individual on. That's sort of a hybrid, or my side gig, or my thing I do for fun. I don't know. I'm just trying to think through, is there this hybrid consumer-ish thing? I was talking to a founder today and they were saying, hey, I have a lot of just hobbyists using my product and they're spending real money on it, which is a surprising development. I think it was impossible to convince anybody to spend money on anything a decade ago. So you needed zero cost acquisition. But now that like the dam has been broken on people spending their hard-earned dollars on tools and apps and games and things they find interesting, does the ROI change, or does that just lead to competitive dynamics that make it impossible to compete? I don't know. Like, do we need a new channel for this to work?
I think prosumer is having also a wave of new companies from AI, and I'm probably slightly more bullish on their ability to scale from a customer acquisition perspective. I think my fear on that side is, do they run up against incumbents that are going to adapt to AI pretty quickly, mm-hmm. right? So I think you've had companies like Photo Room that are doing serious revenue, you know, at this point, definitely prosumer, bizumer, whatever you want to call that, which I think historically venture capital would have considered a dead zone. That's yeah. not where big businesses are built.
The Evernote zone, yeah. it's yeah. like, yeah.
Whatever Evernote did, we don't like that.
Yeah.
I do think people are having to relook at that intersection and say, is that interesting now? And I think I am bullish on more companies there. I don't consider that consumer, you know, in the way that we've considered historical consumer business models. But yeah, I'm definitely more bullish in that area. Do these companies have staying power? Also an open question. But clearly their growth will cap in 3 years once word of mouth dies, because they're not growing just off word of mouth. They can spend money on paid. They can optimize for SEO. Like they can maybe even do some SMB sales, you know, at some point in the future.
The VC dead zone is a really good way to look at it. I think right now consumer is just outside the VC dead zone. Either you've got really big incumbent players that are public or large private players, or I think more so than ever over the last couple of years, there's been an opportunity for people to build consumer and consumer-like businesses that are bootstrapped that probably can't get to venture scale returns, but where, you know, a creator or an indie hacker can come in, find an interesting problem, and create an interesting tool, whether it's AI-based or otherwise, that they can build, you know, 6-7-figure annual run rate. But how do you get from that to venture scale returns, I think, is a bridge that's really hard to cross, and which is very risky in terms of, you know, what that path looks like.
Super interesting. It's like we might have a boom in consumer, but it's actually like the ROI is so high. Like I could build a great 10, 20, 50, maybe even $100 million business with a team of 5, 10, 12, 15, et cetera, because of the leverage that these types of things bring. Bryce Roberts, friend of mine, VC, runs IndieVC, posited the question like, you know, what will be the first less than 10 employee billion dollar revenue company? And it's not a huge stretch to think that that could happen. But the question is, how would they acquire customers? I think Casey's question is still the same.
Okay, I'll argue against myself on this.
Let's do it. Yeah, that's the most fun part kind of conversation.
Which is one thesis that I am pretty interested in is the way SEO was a mixture of both organic and paid distribution opportunities for startups in the early internet was not replicated in mobile because the social networks had all the ad inventory and all the organic eyeballs and basically said, I kind of need you to pay to see any of them. And we were like, fine, we'll pay. But what's happening is now those products are getting so large and there are multiple of them that their search functionality is not pay to play yet. So if you go do TikTok search or Instagram search, there are now billions of eyeballs on those products, a not perfectly fine-tuned algorithm that is impossible to hack. And I think you don't see this so much with the consumer AI companies today because they're just growing off of word of mouth due to the AI craze. But you're seeing other consumer businesses that are saying like, I know how to scalably get in there. I know how to scalably get a mixture of organic and paid social impressions to grow at a very, you know, reasonable CAC or not at all. I'm not seeing it a lot yet, but if that becomes a thing that feels replicable across categories, which is probably a little early for that because, you know, search on these platforms is more limited, the volume in certain categories versus others. But if that blows out and continues to expand, then I think that's an area that's going to feel relatively unoptimized and hackable for consumer startups for a long time. You know, we'll see how that works out. Very nascent, but potentially interesting, especially if you think about the next 5-10 year time horizon.
YouTube is a really good example of that, where you do have a combination. You've got the monetization via search, you've got the pre-roll ads, but you've also got sponsored posts. You've got creators that are promoting their own products. And so there's this really interesting mix of different distribution channels baked into YouTube, which I think ultimately TikTok and maybe Discord and Snap will also get into, so that there'll be lots of smaller, I think, addressable distribution opportunities for consumer oriented companies and products. I still think it's hard without a massive amount of cash to figure out how to build a consumer business through paid that is at the scale where you can have venture scale returns. But absent that, for a smaller business, which is bootstrapped, which doesn't need to deliver those sorts of returns, there's lots of micro distribution opportunities that are very addressable.
Seems kind of contrarian. A16Z published a huge abundance agenda, rebirth of consumer kind of thing, right? And I kind of buy all of these theses right now. Will there be massive changes in companionship and social things? Yes. Productivity stuff? Yes. Content editing, content generation. I'm just reading through some of the ones that they talked about here. Education, certainly. Wellness, etc. That there are a lot of categories that, like, things that weren't possible to do before are possible to do now. So the question is whether that unlocks new opportunities in the same exact channels that have existed before, or whether there needs to be something new. Do we need even just paid OpenAI ChatGPT placements as a way to drive, you know, this mix of organic and social to drive growth? Because right now, even if you build these things, the question, how are you going to grow them beyond just get a bunch of people who love AI to talk about it and rave about it, is still there. The exceptions that I've seen that are interesting that I've been thinking about recently that seem to grow despite this, and mostly through word of mouth, like the old school way of growing a product, make something awesome people talk about. I mean, ChatGPT alone is all organic and like probably the most organic growth any product has ever seen on the history of the planet with no virality whatsoever, right? Well, even some of these developer tools are mostly being used by individuals. That's not exactly consumer, but primarily word of mouth. And so I just wonder whether word of mouth is bigger than we think it is. And maybe we just go back to building great things, but that seems like a cop out.
Well, I think part of my challenge to that is, besides the fact that just word of mouth tends not to last for products like this, because, you know, there's going to be other versions around.
The Uber examples, effect. Like, yeah, it's not magic anymore. It's just a car that picks me up. Yeah.
Is, think, like, all those theses you talked about. Yeah, I'm a big believer in some of those as well. But the incumbents are going to try to build those things as well with a distribution advantage. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we can all talk about how Google is fumbling its distribution advantage, you know, with Gemini versus, you know, OpenAI or, you know, other competitors. But for every one of those, you have five that are like adapting AI just perfectly fine and doing it.
Adobe is probably the best example.
Yeah.
Right?
Adobe's doing great. Canva's doing great. Right. And like, they're not going to wait around to be disrupted, and they have a distribution advantage. And in many cases, they started before the startup started. So that would be the question. Are all those things going to happen? I hope so. I think a lot of them will. The question is it a brand we've already heard of that builds it versus a brand new company?
I think most consumer products fall into a bucket of either their content or their platforms. And so if a consumer product like a game or a show or even a tool that's really cool for a little while goes through a consumer moment, it will grow due to word of mouth. But at some point, there's a half-life there and that starts to fall off. And that's just the nature of consumer. There's a novelty effect. People like to use different things, and you know, they may like to use things that are related. So a franchise of games like Call of Duty, but they're always looking for the next thing. And if you're in a content business, you need to build a portfolio of content in order to build a business that grows over time. If, on the other hand, you can build a consumer business that's a platform, it's much higher lift. There's a lot of noise to break through. You have to be able to build critical mass. But when you can do that, like TikTok has done, or like Facebook or Instagram have done, then you have a really sustainable and durable business. And I think the challenge so far from an investment standpoint is the most investable consumer businesses are platform businesses. But the actual journey to go from a seed stage to I have a durable, growing mass market consumer platform is so long and so fraught with risk that the dollars VCs invest in those platforms just don't make sense relative to SaaS or fintech or other things where that journey is much more clear. The other area where I think there's actually more opportunity than ever before is creating content like consumer businesses, whether it is games or whether it's tools that people are using. I think there's a lot of opportunity to do that. Creators are doing that. Indie hackers are doing that. But the problem there is anytime you build a content business, you have to build a pipeline and a portfolio of content. And VCs just don't want to be in that game because the need to continue to invest to create new things never ends. And as a result, the financial dynamics around those businesses are not well understood. When they work really well, like Netflix has done. But in many cases, it's hard to sustain that level of content investment.
What about on the hardware side? Are you guys excited about any of the cool little devices that are happening? I already said on this podcast that I bought a Ribbit or a Rabbit.
Oh, you did?
Whatever
what do you think
it was called, because it was cheap enough. I don't have it yet. Okay. It's still a pre-order. It may never come. We don't know if it's real, but it sort of fits that perfect early adopter. It's only $200. And if it does half the stuff it says it does, it could be pretty cool and fits a vision of the future that I like, which is I don't look at my phone all the freaking time and I don't have a computer strapped to my face, which is like not a vision I'm excited about. But the Humane was too expensive. If there was a world where people build like very lightweight AI-powered devices that can solve meaningful problems for me around my home, around my life, around my work, I think I'm a little bullish on that. But again, I don't know how you sell them, but maybe there's known channels there, like B2B, right? You just put them in stores, everything else that all the other consumer hardware in the world.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm bullish on this current crop, right? I think, hardware in general is always tough in consumer because you don't get a lot of shots on goal because it's so expensive with all the lead times. You're competing against the mindshare of the best brand marketers in the world, which is Apple, Nike, et cetera. So like I have a Whoop, I like it, but also Whoop's like a 11-year-old company. Like it's not new. It took it like 10 years for me to learn about it, that it was out there. So it just takes time for the brand to build for these you know, kind of companies. So I feel like all of this first wave, they certainly go away. And you obviously, the Apple Vision Pro is not a serious people device at this point. I think it's supposed to be an MVP to get there, like we talked about, you know, Apple typically does. But is that 5-10 years? It's interesting when you look at the portrayal of AI in the media, movies, television, et cetera, right? So everything's just an earpiece, right? We already have that tech. We don't need any, like you're wearing it. We don't need any new tech for that. And yeah, if you really want to do visual stuff, you're going to eventually need to get something, an Apple Vision Pro size, into something that's like this or less. And then everyone will probably use it. But you run up against so many just laws of physics constraints right now that you kind of get this kitschy stuff in the interim. And I don't think the kitschy stuff stays around very long. I'm all for people, you know, experimenting and seeing how they can innovate. But yeah, nothing's really grabbed me there. And yeah, I can't imagine anyone does for quite a while for a lot of reasons.
I've been really impressed with the Steam Deck, which is a handheld gaming PC. And for the first time, you've been able to get PC level hardware into a handheld unit that doesn't overheat, that has a reasonable battery life. And so it's a great device. It's pretty delightful in terms of how powerful it is and the games that you can play. And I think from a business standpoint, it's really interesting. The company that created it, Valve, is one of the largest private companies in the world. They have a massive ecosystem around selling games. They're one of the leading app stores for PC games. And I think the combination of hardware plus the app store plus the content that they're creating is going to give them a really defensible position over the next 3 to 5 years and make it so that they're competing directly against Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo at a level that I think is going to catch those guys by surprise.
Yeah, PlayStation just launched kind of a competitor called the PlayStation Portal. I don't know if that's going to be for serious people either, but it's kind of interesting in that normally, if you ask me like, well, how are the next 10 years of video games going to go? I'd be like, well, the big companies get better and better at owning the right studio talent, and they put out amazing games that they can confidently get people to buy transactional or subscription. And the hardware just kind of goes away as, you know, cloud streaming gets better and better, you know, over the next decade and can handle performance. And certainly the ability to handle things on a mobile device like Steam Deck and the Portal indicates that's a trend in the right direction of what's going to be possible technically. But then you actually see these companies that know that are also investing in new forms of hardware. You know, in addition to the Portal, there's the PlayStation VR 2 or whatever. So maybe just no one's got a clue how any of this stuff shakes out. So they're just kind of trying to cover a bunch of different bases and do things that are interesting. But yeah, those are pretty big time investments in hardware, right? Much larger companies than Humane, Rabbit, et cetera.
How much of this difficulty around consumer, and I think I'm sort of bundling consumer and social as one category. I'll take some of the productivity prosumer stuff out of here. But let's just say entertainment type consumer products right now is a result of the fact not only of the distribution problem, Casey, but also that timeshare is very limited now because basically Instagram and TikTok are like so hyper engaging that they've sucked all the air out of the like time on, and you know, Netflix, et cetera. There's just so much stuff. So I guess my question is, does TikTok exiting the US help startups or hurt startups? What's the trade-off of I took away a distribution channel versus people have free time and are looking for new shit to do type interactions?
Well, I do think you're right that it's an efficient market. And when you see the consumer subscription companies that have been able to maintain incredibly high retention rates over time, what you also see is they have the most massive spend investments in content. And that's Amazon Prime, Spotify, and Netflix, right? After that, it's a big drop off. So yeah, I think the efficient market for entertainment is problematic. And then on the TikTok, it's not going to get banned, right? It's going to get sold. So
I don't know. I hope it gets banned. As a person with teenagers, I'd like to never see another TikTok in my life.
I'm not a user, so I don't really care. But yeah, I agree with all the thoughts on why it should be banned or at least divested. Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? So if TikTok goes away tomorrow, there are all of a sudden hours of teenage time that becomes available.
Right.
I would imagine it just shifts to YouTube and Instagram immediately.
Yeah,
I think that's right. Probably goes to Reels, like instantly.
Like, yeah. Just in 1 second, it's like, boom, next app is open. But, you know, I can't pretend that I understand the teenage market the best in the world.
I agree. I think it shifts immediately. I think all the creators move over. I think all the people move over. And by the next day, teen time spent on mobile hasn't gone down. It's just being spent in different places.
Okay, so this has felt sort of, you know, unfortunate. Like, hey, there's a lot of really cool technological stuff that's happening that's unlocking new consumer opportunities for product-minded founders to go build. But this distribution problem is still deep and meaningful. And so I guess my question for the two of you is, like, what advice do you have for someone building consumer products right now? Or what, with the startups that you've been working with, is working that they should be thinking about to make sure they still remain somewhat competitive or have an opportunity to find distribution advantage and opportunities in order to build great, durable, long-term consumer successes, right? And let's take away the venture scale thing, but let's say something that feels meaningful to work on for 3 to 4 years. Investable, but like, I still don't know the answer to the billion-dollar question. Facebook didn't have that answer for a decade.
I think it's actually a really exciting time for consumer entrepreneurs. You're going to have to think differently about funding. And, you know, in most cases, bootstrapping is going to be the right answer. And if you're bootstrapping a company, the two things you need to do are create a really great product and then get to profitability as quickly as possible. And one of the things I think is exciting is if there's less VC dollars going into consumer, that means you're not competing with companies that are competing with you at a loss. So you're competing on an even playing field. Everyone's trying to build something that is profitable and sustainable over the long term. And so if you create something really good, you figure out how to get to profitability, then you can start to market it in small, schleppy ways, like just direct marketing to the people that are going to get the most value, and then start to figure out the more scalable channels. It may not look like paid search and Meta. It may look more like, you know, really interesting SEO tactics or really interesting influencer marketing tactics. And if you're not building a VC-backed company, the point at which the ARR that you're generating gets really interesting to you, to the point where you can leave your job or you can start to build a team around things, is so much lower that those milestones are much closer and much more accessible than they are when you're at a VC-backed company, where yes, you have more resources to work with, but you've also got, you know, this incredible bridge to cross in terms of getting to multiple $1 million in ARR very quickly.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I actually have a slide on that I present to new entrepreneurs inside, you know, like accelerators and stuff. And when I get to the consumer slide, it literally just says pivot. But if you ignore that advice for a second, then I think, to Ravi's point, the bar for product quality is a lot higher. And that's not just you can generate word of mouth, which we've talked about doesn't necessarily have the sustainability to really solve your problem. It's that it will create a better ability to leverage the current growth channels that do exist, which is virality, content loops, or paid acquisition, right? So it probably means you're going to have a way higher bar of retention for a consumer subscription or marketplace business model company that's making money right away. And then you need to be retaining and monetizing so well that you can play the efficient game of SEO over time, or, you know, getting some virality mixed in with some paid. So that's generally what I look for is like, yeah, your retention's just got to be way higher. Your ability to monetize it has to be way higher. And then you're playing the game we've all been playing on the field for the last 15 years. No problem.
You're just playing it in corners nobody else is looking because nobody else is spending tons of money to fight.
Right.
Stay off the main lines.
Don't go head to head with the juggernauts anywhere. But otherwise, you have a product that performs well enough to play the current game. Most AI startups don't have a product that works well enough to play the current game. They need basically a new game to unfold, and maybe that new game will unfold, but just way too early for us to tell that. So I think you're going to see more of those. Or maybe if you're going for boom or bust, then probably the way to do it is to build a game. Because some of these games that are doing incredibly well, multiplayer, concurrent, you know, records on Steam, are not built by the largest teams. Like Fortnite is an unbelievably large team, right? But some of these games that have gone viral and had really big success and made their creators a ton of money are pretty small teams. And not all of them are multiplayer either. There's some that do it on the single player side too, but it's a little bit more boom and bust, right? You have constrained development cycle, you go take a crack. And I think a lot of people have been doing that on consumer social. And everyone that's tried to do that consumer social has no scale or retention ever. So then they're like, can I monetize some IAP before everyone leaves and then start the next project? And then even if I get something that sustains, it sustains in a way that doesn't monetize directly, like Be Real, which then means I need more product innovation to create a product that can monetize, which doesn't seem to be really happening with Be Real. So yeah, that's why I'm like, it's probably not going to be consumer social products for any near foreseeable future. But if you can make subscriptions or marketplaces work with just a higher bar for what the retention looks like, then you're fine.
I think an important insight there is if you're going to bootstrap something consumer, create something that's single player, not multiplayer. Whether it's a game or a product, if you're creating something that's multiplayer, you need to have liquidity. You need to have this critical mass of people using it. And if it's real-time multiplayer, like a real-time social app, you need to have people using it at the same time. And so you need an order of magnitude or two orders of magnitude more people using your product in order to get to a good user experience than you do with a single-player product. And so if you can start with something that is useful on its own, doesn't require a large installed base, a large active user base, and then grow from there, that's much easier if you're bootstrapping a consumer business.
See, I was going to go slightly the other direction, but I think I like both agree and disagree is the way I would describe it. Absolutely. Concurrency is very, very hard. We use the example of Facebook Live. Facebook, with every human on the planet using it, had a hard time getting a live all at the same time product to work well. That should be some pretty good evidence that outside of certain kinds of games with long play times, right, or small group dynamics, it is very hard to do this well. Like matching is hard, concurrency is hard, et cetera. I agree with that. I do think the thing that I've been fascinated by as I look at the realm of all these interesting AI consumer-y type products right now is none of them have anything that resembles network effects of any kind in them. They are driven by word of mouth and usage, and there's data network effects supposedly with real human feedback and all that sort of stuff. But I am more interested in the, this is just a random idea, but like character AI is kind of cool. You build, have these conversations with these synthetic characters, but there should probably be a way for you to connect with humans and robots in the same like conversation, right? There's no sense of connectivity or like scale. So if you were going boom or bust, I would ask the question, everything old is new. Like the ways to grow are, as Casey said, virality, content sharing and distribution, usually through adjacent channels. So get good at scalable ways to do TikTok, et cetera. And I'm not talking just make TikTok videos. Like your users are sharing them and they are created in your product and watermarked, branded, et cetera, in some way, which I think for a lot of creativity tools could be very, very good. Or paid. Learn to spend a lot of money and learn to spend in places nobody else is spending so you can acquire them, right? And then SEO, which is sort of related to the content one. But you need some scalable way of content being generated. It's the only three ways. And then in the long term, the only durable moats are some kind of network effects and maybe brand. Like those are the things that drive long-term durable businesses. So if you're going big, ask the question, why does the service get better when more people use it? And right now, I don't think that I've seen a lot of great examples of good answers to that. And I would love to.
Thanks, Casey, for joining us. There's a couple of things that I really took away today. I think the first one is for consumer entrepreneurs and consumer investors. It feels like we're at a both an interesting time as well as a tough time from consumer. I think there's more opportunities than ever to create value for consumers. People are spending more time online. The rate at which they're willing to try new products is increasing. But I think ultimately the challenge is that there are big incumbent players like Apple, like Epic, like Amazon that are in the consumer space that just make it hard for new players to enter. And so we talked about the fact that one of the best places to enter from a consumer standpoint is to think small initially, figure out what is an area where you can build something really interesting, build something great for a small set of people, figure out how to get to really tight product market fit, and then grow from there, and then figure out the channels that are scalable over time. Not every business needs to be a venture scalable business out of the gate. And some bootstrap businesses turn into venture scalable businesses over time. And so thank you, Casey. This has been incredibly valuable.